What's up, Fight Fan? You're listening to MMA Daily, the podcast where we bring you the latest in the world of mixed martial arts. It is Monday, March 4th, 2024, and this week's episode, UFC Mania in Miami. We'll talk about this past Saturday's UFC event from the Apex, Jairzinho Rozenstrike getting past Shamil Gaziev, and some of the highlights of the undercard. We'll talk about the insane doubleheader we have on tap, Knockout Chaos, and the boxing match between Anthony Joshua and Francis Ngannou, and the absolutely super loaded, can't get much better than this, and we'll discuss if they did, UFC 299 from Miami, Florida. My name is Gabriel Gonzalez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Natalie Zamudio.
Hello, Double G. Happy March. Happy day. How are you?
You know what? You know I love March. I really gotta say so. I'm always good. It's always good when you have a fight week like this with just so much on the line and all that. It's just one of those you wish you could be at everything. It really is quite the epic week we have on tap.
Yeah, Miami with this fight card, it's like, yeah, you definitely want to be wearing your shades on the Ocean Drive or whatever that street's called, and you're taking it all in for sure.
Oh, yeah. You know, Calle Ocho. Let's go.
Calle Ocho, party time. Okay. I was like, what's it called?
Yeah, but no, look, it's quite the card. It's quite the thing we're going to really sink our teeth into. To work chronologically, though, obviously on Saturday, we did have a UFC fight night. The big boys in action, and Biggie Boy took the dub. Natalie, to be very straightforward, super impressed. Clearly, Jairzinho put in the work to, you know, improve his game since the last time we saw him. I think that this is just a combination of experience and, you know, just a lot of dedication to really get himself to a level where he wasn't going to fall victim to that, you know, for want of a better way to say it, just that easy route to victory people have displayed against him. Get him down and he's less formidable. He kept it on the feet. He really battered Shamil across those, 15, 20 minutes?
Yeah.
Really impressed. And for Shamil, credit to his toughness. This is a guy who was on Contender Series last year, went from opening the prelims, and in his second official UFC fight is in the main event. That is a very, look, he has a decent record, but that is a big jump for any fighter. And I thought that he handled everything quite well. He was just maybe a little overmatched, and you know, that's credit to Jairzinho. I think a lot of people, I think, you know, unfortunately, I'm going to put him out there like this. Edson Barbosa is another guy. It just feels like, you know, as much work as he's put in, the wrestling has never got there. Jairzinho didn't fall victim to that trap. And against a guy who could grapple, he was able to get it done. So very impressed. Also, shout out to the referee, how he stopped it. I thought that he handled that very professionally, very authoritatively, and, you know, I just appreciated his good officiating.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Mark Goddard could tell something was up when you see the energy in the corner. He's like, okay, wait a minute. It's like when a teacher sees a bunch of kids huddled around a table and they're like, something's going on here. Let me see. So, I mean, the man couldn't see. He was getting beat up pretty nicely at the end there, round four. And, you know, I think that's totally fine. Like, you have to look out for the fighters. If a fighter, look, we've been watching MMA and boxing long enough, right? If a fighter says they're injured, it's because they're injured, right? A lot of times they just pretend, they hide it, they don't say anything. They don't want to make a big deal out of it. But if they're calling it out in the middle of a fight, it's for a very good reason. You got to listen to the fighter. So it was a good call out. Or a good call by Goddard. And Rozenstrike, yeah, man, he looked very good. He stayed patient. This was a much improved Rozenstrike, and it showed. I mean, he got that victory over a big dude who was trying his best to put on a clinic on him, but he couldn't get going. So impressive win. And look, heavyweights throw heavy punches and they cause heavy damage. That's the nature of the beast at that weight class. So not surprising that Shamil had some trouble there with the with the eyes at the end. Sometimes my son accidentally hits me in the eyeball, and it's not fun. You see a little bit of white, and it hurts, and that's just a 4-year-old. So I totally get it, Double G. You understand?
Yes, of course, of
We're the
course.
same. Me and Shamil, same.
It's hey, dude, it gets you, same difference. I totally see it. Look, I'm not gonna say this kind of propelled him into those fights with Tom Aspinall and Ciryl Gane. I think that you just kind of gotta wait and see who's available. I mean, the thing about Jairzinho, to his credit, is he has fought. I mean, I think it's probably easier to discuss with you who hasn't he fought. I mean, Volkov, Overeem, Gane. It's just really a who's who, and I think that his, the challenge with him now is just kind of like, what position do you want him to be in? Do you feel like he is a guy to propel a younger guy? Is he kind of in that fight another vet kind of deal? You know what I mean? So I think that that's just something that now you got to figure out. I don't know. Did anyone leap out to you on the rankings as a potential next guy for Mr. Rosenstrike?
No, and that's probably because, let me see, haven't been like the heavyweight division has always been kind of like there's a few guys at the top, and then there's the holy grail at the super top that we can't even get him to fight.
Yeah.
So let's see,
I
let me
mean,
just take a
Derek
quick.
Lewis stands out to me as a guy, maybe Tai Tuivasa. I mean, just because, with respect to Shamil, Rosenstrike is also a fun guy to watch when you know he's got someone who's going to bang with them. Both of those guys would oblige that. And
Oh yeah.
I think Derek Lewis coming off the loss to Almeida, I think Tai Tuivasa
What's Curtis
taking
Blades
that.
up to? Up to?
Well, he's Curtis Blaydes fighting this Saturday.
Guess who didn't know
Oh my gosh.
that? Just kidding. Let me see. Is he?
Jelton
Well,
Almeida, big fight.
that's right. Guys, come on.
Natalie.
Samudio. Hey, look, let the first. Let he who has not forgotten a fight throw the first stone.
Okay. Fair enough. It's
Excuse
like, what you mean, when's he
me, I
fighting?
just went to church yesterday, so it's all fresh in my mind. Oh
I hear you.
man.
Look,
Okay,
I mean,
so
that's a big card. I'm not gonna lie. If you ask me to name all of the bangers on this one, I will miss one, like off the top of my head right now. Like, I was doing the breakdown and I'm like, wait, and then I really forgot to write Poirier Dennis, and it's just like, dude,
See?
what's going on? It's a five, all of this. It's a lot of
Oh yeah,
fights.
they're closing out the prelims. Okay. I
Yeah.
just forgot.
Look, Derek or Ty, I mean, Ty, I want him to take some more time off. Hasn't fought since September, so it's March. You think about 10, 11 months. If that's not enough, don't really know much more we could give him. And then for Derek Lewis, I feel like stylistically, with a good camp, that's more than enough time for a good fight with a guy like Jairzinho.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And stylistically fun, rankings make sense. It would be a great boost on any card you decide to put it on, or you could fight night main event it. So yeah, I'm down with it.
All right. I like it.
Some highlights from the undercard, because we do have a lot to talk about. Umar Nurmagomedov, I don't know how much I felt like, oh, he's out. Yeah, I felt like he was stunned for sure. To his credit, he did say that he kind of woke back up as he's trying to take down Bekset. So very impressed with Umar. Keeps it rolling. Kind of in that weird no man's land. He's kind of like, he's too good to fight a nobody, but he's not highly ranked enough that the top guys wanna be his stepping stone
Yeah,
potentially.
exactly. I don't want to take a chance.
It's like, you know what? I won't fall down as far if I lose to Sanhagen, but I will fall down if I lose to Umar.
Yep.
So I'd rather push for a fight with Corey. And it's like, he'll get that fight. Muhammad Mukhaev too. Like, this one I highlight more or less because Pantoja said, "Well, Royval beat Moreno, so now if Mukhaev wins, I'm probably fighting Mukhaev." I don't know that I saw that fight, even though he won. First off, I really thought that could have gone to Perez.
Yeah, it could have.
Secondly, I don't know that I saw that and I looked at it and Okay, I'll say it like this. John Jones, when he was on his way to the title, destroying dudes. And Makhachev, leading up to this, has been pretty dominant. I'll give him that credit. But I don't know that I saw that fight and was like, oh yeah, you're ready to take on Pantoja. And just FYI, look at Pantoja's freaking record. Moreno 3 times, Royval twice, beat Manel Kopp, beat, I mean, been doing work. That is a tough out for anybody. And I don't know that I saw that and thought, okay, turn it around, 10 weeks, UFC main event, co-main event, in enemy territory. I don't know that I saw that from Makhachev, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I didn't either. And especially because Alex Perez had, like, yeah, you said it could have gone either way. He had some really good moments in there. He was game the complete entire fight, fighting against every takedown attempt, every, scramble, every clinch against the cage. Like, he had an answer for everything. And so yeah, I agree. It wasn't like this breakout, star making performance where I'm like, oh man, get this guy a ticket. He punched himself a ticket to, contendership, title contention. No, didn't see that. So, flyweight is kind of funny. Like, what other division do these guys fight each other so often?
Well, I mean, I think that's a testament to the level these guys are at. I'd like to acknowledge that. I'd also, that was a great pace, and I saw Makhachev post about the staph infection that he had going into it and how sick he was, and it's like, okay, I'm gonna give him a bit of leeway. That being said, this is also a marketing thing, right? Young guy didn't have that lights out performance he needs, and now it's, I think about it from the consumer side. Did I see that and think, all right, I'm ready to watch you. I'm ready to pay $85 to watch you and Pantoja.
Exactly. No, it didn't. But again, it's not like it. Okay,
It
they're
didn't hurt his
obviously.
stock, by the way. I mean, this, I think he's under 25 and still rolling up the ladder. I mean, it really is something.
It is. And it was a great performance. It's just, if you're asking me, does this like make me think like, oh man, title shot? No. But it doesn't always work that way. Like, in fact, it should more often work just based on merit, right? We talk about this all the time. Sometimes star-studded performances or people, fighters with the star quality are able to jump the line because they talk a good game. But if you're just looking at, you got a win and you have the most wins next in line compared to everybody else, you should get a title shot. Like, yeah, then this man, Makhachev, is the guy. So there's no issue with him getting a title shot if you're just looking at it from that perspective.
Then you know what? I'll give you that next man up kind of mentality. That's not okay. My one thing about it, I don't like him making this turnaround if he's still lingering with the staff and now he just had that fight. If he came out and like 20-second knocked him out, let's go. This fight, that makes me feel like, ugh, I know the bones and the muscles and the joints are young, but oh man, that's a lot to fix up on a tight turnaround. And I feel like even he suggested fighting somebody else next. I don't know that they talked to him and said, hey, be ready for Brazil. But as we know, the UFC is going to do what they got to do. Pantoja is the only available champion. I don't know. I guess we'll see. By the way, before we close it out, Vinicius Oliveira, with a knockout of the year candidate, sent that young man to the shadow realm, if I may say so myself.
Dude, wowzers.
That is Mac A. When we say what is a maximum violence knockout, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that
Not all
was.
knockouts are created equal.
That was crazy, dude. And like, so Pai, I can't remember how you say it, pronounce his last name.
Sopage, yeah.
Sopage. I mean, it was already, like his goose was already cooked. Turned his back, was kind of like just trying to reorient himself, and ba bam, and the switch knee. It's just, I mean,
Timing, good run behind it.
he just came running. It was almost like a practice. Like, hey, stand there and let me see if I can land this flying knee on you, because it got. It was just too like, Mortal Kombat. And yeah, KO of the year for sure, dude. Like, I could see it winning, because any kind of punch isn't gonna be as cool as that. Like any kind of punch by knockout or knockout by punch isn't going to be as cool as that flying knee knockout.
No, I mean, look, he's look, it's only March. He's moving his way. It'll be on the list. We've had a great year if we forget about that one. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, look, wasn't the most loaded undercard, but I really think people showed out on that one. I think you got a lot more than maybe you a lot of fans thought they would at face value. So, good stuff to digest from there as we move forward. But this week, I mean, let's get right into it because we have so much to talk about. First off, Knockout Chaos. This Friday, I believe it's in the middle of the day for Dubai time, but Anthony Joshua, former multiple heavyweight title holder, taking on Francis Ngannou. Joshua, in the last 2 years since losing to Usyk, has rebuilt himself, gotten on a big win streak again. Was gonna fight Deontay Wilder, except Wilder lost the same night on Christmas Eve around that time. And Francis Ngannou, look, if you haven't li listened to us, you listen to someone else talk about him. Just this Cinderella story in boxing, almost arguably beats Tyson Fury. Secures the bag, negotiates, gets a second bag for this huge fight with Joshua, a chance to. If he wins, he's most likely headlining another supercard in Riyadh against the winner of Fury and Usyk. Everything is right there for him to shake up boxing. And even if he doesn't, he has a huge payday in MMA going back to the PFL to fight Henan Ferreira. Really, the man is just winning. So it really becomes, is all of that momentum gonna culminate in this winning moment, or is Anthony Joshua kind of going to keep rolling and we figure out what happens with Fury and Usyk? So, look, there's a lot to enjoy. I know this isn't the boxing show, and even though we'd have obviously done it in the past, but what are your thoughts on the whole situation for Francis and the guys?
Yeah, Cinderella story is the best way to frame it, and we're just excited to see one of our guys, doing well in the world of boxing and actually competing against fighters, his size, right? They always say don't pick on someone your own size, right? So unlike what we've seen with Jake Paul, who picks, old, short, lighter weight wrestlers to fight in boxing. Ngannou is just going straight to the heavyweight cream of the crop and hanging in there so far, with the one fight against Tyson Fury. But it was one fight against lineal champ Tyson Fury. So, and like you said, it was close as heck, and there was that knockdown. So I am very excited for this. It's a surprisingly fast turnaround for Joshua. I feel like we like to see, you see more active competition from sort of younger fighters coming up, but this is almost just 3 months. Usually these big time, big name boxers don't come around that fast. So that's interesting. It could just be he wanted to keep going, he wasn't hurt, and this opportunity came up. So here we go. No doubt Anthony Joshua is in tip-top shape, as will I expect Francis Ngannou. Is he going to have learned? How much did he learn from the Tyson Fury fight? Did they make smart adjustments? Did they modify training in intelligent ways? Is the ego in check? Not that he has an ego issue, but anyone coming up, just think about any movie you've seen where the or the of the Cinderella story where the guy or girl is coming up and then they have a moment where their egos get too big and they get slapped down and they have to, rehumble themselves. So that might have already happened in Ngannou's life during his run in the UFC. I don't know, but it's always something I think about. So is the ego in check? And then, come fight night, who's going to be the better boxer? I mean, I don't know, man. Francis, I regard Tyson Fury very highly for his skill set in boxing. And so to see Francis Ngannou fight him the way he did was incredibly surprising, impressive. I expect the same from Ngannou this time around, if not more. And Anthony Joshua is no joke. But I would regard Tyson Fury as a better boxer than Anthony Joshua. You can tell me I'm wrong. I'm happy to hear it. That's not to say this is going to be an easy fight. I'll toss it back to you. But before, I want to know if you watched that Street Fighter commercial they made. What'd you think of it?
Of course, I thought it was awesome. I've been playing the Street Fighter 8-bit Ngannou Joshua game that they released on the website. I mean, look, for you younger kids who, grew up with not needing to hang up the house phone to use the internet, that was my jam. Like, Mini Gabriel was just, at the computer back early 2000s, didn't have to work yet, you know what I mean? Playing all that stuff that they came out with. It was awesome. yeah, look, I think going back to the business, I think it's so unfortunate that Francis isn't in UFC because the promotion they have done for these two fights, I personally think has been fantastic. I mean, I go back to those giant statues in England with Francis and Tyson. I look at all this Street Fighter stuff. I love the Street Fighter poster. I love that they're leaning into it. I love that you know that these are two superstars. You don't need to tell people who watch who Anthony Joshua is. You don't need to tell people who Francis Ngannou is. And I think it's unfortunate that the UFC isn't a part of it because imagine how much bigger it would be if you had the UFC also promoting this. I get it, that there's a very big cut of the fan base. There's UFC and then there's the other guys. What's their name? I don't care. I don't know. I don't care. I don't watch it enough. I just know there are other guys. And that's just it. People move on with their lives and they don't care to talk to you about the Bellator, PFL, one championship of it all, and they're perfectly happy. And I get it. I am that way about other things. It's just how life is. But I think that you have to acknowledge the real concerted effort that they're making. Not every fight gets this kind of promo, and I think that that is in respect to the level that of the guys that you have in this big fight. I don't like that it's happening the Friday before a big pay-per-view.
I
I think
know.
that look, unfortunately, this does a lot of things to the entire MMA sphere, and what I mean by that is media. That look, to tell you a little bit, how's the recipe made? As much as it seems like there's unlimited money for these groups, the fact is there's only so much budget for, an MMA junkie or other websites like that. And Miami is an expensive place. Dubai is a way more expensive place. These are big events that require multiple days and for a bunch of media, multiple flights. And that's not to say that there won't be media that goes to both. There will be a presence for sure, but at a certain point, especially as the UFC continues to go more global, as more events go global, there will come that kind of breaking point where the fact is, it's Fury, it's Joshua, or it's Ngannou, it's Joshua, and it's like, yeah, but we don't have people. We got to make a call. Look at the UFC's card. We're MMA this or fighting this. And it's like, and so it's unfortunate because I think that if UFC is a part of it, if there's only one show in town, they feel bigger. The fact that your attention is split, let's be real. The consumer that wants to enjoy this the way it's meant to be enjoyed in high def, no interruption, now they're split. You have choices to make. Spend my money on this, spend my money on that. not for nothing, America, tax season. Not a lot of people want to spend money right now. All of these things are very relevant in terms of whether or not this event feels big. And, that's just it. That's a first world problem. They're going to be great fights. It's completely possible to access them both live or after the fact. So that's just going to be where you're at. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a tough choice to be made, and it's it's a bummer that they're back to back, because it's like two events that are so good, so juicy, and they're just like holding hands. You know, and it's like if it had been UFC 298, Anthony Joshua, or I'm sorry, Joshua and Ngannou, like, oh, maybe it makes it a little easier, maybe. Okay, maybe. Or the flip side, if it was a different boxing matchup versus 299, you're like, oh, okay, I just have to pick one. I'm okay. But this is a hard one, man. What a. I don't know what people are gonna do.
Well, I just think of the attention. I mean, the second you split attention, both don't feel as big. Because let's say, I
That's
mean,
true too.
okay, you've seen Aladdin. Everyone's seen Aladdin. Remember when he's coming into the town with the whole thing and the pomp and circumstance?
Yeah,
Imagine
and
if they do
just
something
can't wait to be
similar.
king. Yeah. Oh no,
Imagine
that's
they
the
do
Lion
something
King, yeah.
similar. Like, they go all out and, you know, you got lions and maybe someone walks out on elephants. I mean, Ryan Garcia showed up to his press conference in downtown LA on a horse. You telling me we can't find an elephant in the Middle East?
Oh,
I
they've
mean,
got elephants, camels. They'll mate them and make an elephant camel for
I've
you.
read
Yeah.
those books. You got people with pet jaguars in some
Yep.
areas. You know, healthy, like freaking fit jaguars, not been eating cat food all day jaguars, you know? And I'm like, imagine if they were to go all out. But then it's like, oh yeah, UFC 299 Media Day and O'Malley and Chito are about it becomes a whole thing. And it is, I acknowledge the fan base who knows they have to pay dollars to see something, it becomes split. And yeah, I do think that at a certain level, it hurts the bottom line. And even Eddie Hearn, the promoter, acknowledged this. They're
Yeah.
just, no one likes to do events close together. Because at a certain point, there are diminished returns no matter how good you promote it. And that's just a fact. So, let's enough about the business though. Let's get into brass tacks. The thing in Joshua's favor is that there's no element of surprise. You now saw what Ngannou looks like when he's just boxing for 12 rounds. And while he may be stylistically different from Fury, that is a lot of data for a guy like Joshua who has a good team, who's been very well prepared for many years and at the top
Yeah.
of the game for many years to analyze and prepare for. For to Ngannou's credit, he has the same weapons he had going into the Fury fight, and he's got the same nuclear option. You don't need when you have power like a guy like him, like a guy like Deontay, you just need one. You don't need to be as perfect as often as I think, for example, a guy like Joshua will. If Joshua finds himself and it's a little bit of an even fight, you have to be very perfect for that first half because that is exactly where Francis Ngannou has a high probability. He doesn't have to catch you with the cleanest one, he just has to catch you with a good one, and you could be in a world of trouble. So that's what makes this intriguing. To a lot of people, it boils down to will Francis catch Anthony or not? I think it's a little bit different. I think it's how dirty and effective Francis can make this. You know, clinching, work the body, keep Anthony from setting up that rhythm and pace, kind of like essentially what he did to Tyson Fury. And that fight, you have a high probability of Ngannou starting to steal rounds. If he struggles with executing those things, it's very fair to say that Anthony Joshua will most likely do what he does to a victory. And, you know, that now becomes does something dramatic happen? And that's the major selling point. What about you?
Yeah, man, it's a lot of what ifs here because we know where Joshua is of late. We know what Francis Ngannou can do in MMA. We've seen him improve over time to streamline his skill sets, not streamline them, but smooth them out. He's always had the power. He just had to find a way to use skill and fight IQ and all that stuff to best utilize the power. Okay. Then we see him in Tyson Fury. Oh my goodness, he can box. Not only can he box, he can box against the best heavyweight, the lineal champion, Tyson Fury. So a lot of what ifs now because, like I said at the start of this, what has he learned? How has he improved? Man, the thing with this one is, I don't know what the odds are, and I'm probably crazy for saying it's, it feels just like in my heart, like a pick'em, because Joshua could just outbox him, and Ngannou could land that lucky shot, and Ngannou's boxing could be more, more improved from what we've just seen. It's so hard to know here what's going to happen. I guarantee you, Ngannou is going to want to put on a show, stay smart. And Joshua does not want to lose to Francis Ngannou. And so what does that mean for Anthony Joshua? What kind of performance does he have to put on to make sure he doesn't lose? He wants to beat him, I'm sure, but more importantly, he doesn't want to lose to him. Like, Andy Ruiz, that was a shocking loss by Anthony Joshua. But he came back and he showed that, it was just, you could call it a bad night, you could call it a just a moment of like magnificence for Andy Ruiz, whatever it is. But Joshua has shown that he can rebound, recover, reset, and win again. I still think though, for him, it's more about not winning. I'm sorry, not a, more about not losing than it is about winning. Do you want me to make my pick?
Go ahead.
Okay. All that to say, my heart and my brain tell me, as we are on the MMA Daily Show, I'm gonna go with my man Francis Ngannou. I'm gonna say knockout round seven
Knockout round seven.
for Francis Ngannou. Yes,
Oh
sir.
boy, oh
Are
boy.
the belts on the line? This is a real one, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Wait, no. Anthony Joshua doesn't have any belts right now.
Then forget it. Forget I said that.
Usyk took him off of him.
That's right, that's right. Okay.
You know what's weird is more than a lot of fights that we have, I think about all of the implications. Ngannou wins, he may never fight PFL, honestly. Ngannou loses, I'm pretty sure I'll be at a Ngannou Ferreira press conference in about a month. It's all relative, right? If I have to say, and I say this as someone who appreciates those big boxing events, I wanted to see Fury Joshua before Joshua lost the belts. I felt like it would have been huge. You put that in the UK, Battle of the UK, Two Kings, all that good stuff. It was so perfect. Would have been so awesome. Clash of personalities doesn't happen. Very disappointing. Now we have a second chance. Fury wins, Joshua wins. It's right there in Riyadh. That being said, once again, we're like, what do we do with it? Like, Joshua loses, and now we're running it back with Ngannou for Tyson, or maybe Ngannou Usyk. I mean, who's talking about that one? But that's a real possibility too. I mean, you put all this together, it becomes quite the thing. My heart says that Joshua will follow through. Part of me would like nothing more than to see a world where Francis Ngannou has beaten Anthony Joshua just for the reaction. But as someone who still likes to see those big fights, I'd still like to see Fury Joshua coming off of wins. So I'm gonna go Joshua on this one.
Okay, all through for decision?
Yeah.
Okay. That seems likely too.
What happens with the future of Francis? That literally we have no idea till next week, so I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. All right.
UFC 299 is coming up. I mean, what a night. What a I mean, I'm gonna just get started, really. I mean, we could talk all day about, Battle Miami right now. First fight, the UFC debut of Michael Venom Page against the Trailblazer Kevin Holland. What I like about this one, great clash of personalities, great clash of styles. Ironically, a guy like Kevin has a great grappling game. If he chooses to use it against Michael Venom Page, it could really change this entire outlook of the fight. I think on the feet, they have a lot of fun stuff. They can really push each other, but the aspect of the grappling, I mean, Kevin Holland could really start to work it and just go for some double legs and all that and body locks, and this could become a very different matchup. What about you?
Yeah, that's the thing, is like you want to see him. You want, look, whenever MVP fights, you want him to be able to be MVP. And that's the bottom line. And so if someone comes in there and tries to derail that, disrupt that, I'm going to be mad at you. It's like when someone fights Nate Diaz and they're trying to take him down. I mean, well, he's got the jiu-jitsu thing, but still, you know, Nate Diaz, you want to see him scrap, right? So that's how I feel about this fight. But I think Kevin Holland, oh man, he's not going to want to lose to MVP on this mega card. I mean, he's not going to want to lose ever, of course, but there's a little bit of a welcome to the UFC. Let's show you how it's done. And so I think Kevin Holland's going to show him the hands and then take it to the, and then use his grappling to remind MVP, you know, you can't just win fights with your slick in and out karate stance. Here you got to know everything. Not to say that MVP doesn't. I think he's grappling. He's actually won by submission multiple times. But when you think of MVP, you think of the guy standing there like a cobra with his arms down, bouncing around and popping out the punch and knocking people out. So Michael Venom Page is not a one-trick pony, but his highlight reel might suggest that, but he's not. He's also well-rounded. He's older though. Surprisingly does not have the reach advantage here. Kevin Holland's got the longer arms. And I'm so excited to see MVP in the cage. It's hard for me to make a pick here. I want MVP to win. I want him to do what he does. I have a feeling Kevin Holland's just going to be able to stand with him a little bit and then take it down, and that's going to be it. And I think he's going to, I don't think he's going to submit him. I think it's just going to go the distance. I don't think it's going to be a barn burner, man. I really don't. It's going to be Kevin Holland by decision. What do you think?
That's on when I going into it, that's what I was leaning toward. The thing that I will give MVP credit is that Kevin Holland is exactly the kind of opponent where I don't know that his offensive wrestling is as lights out that MVP can't defend a few and maybe cause some problems on the break.
Okay.
He is still a very young, powerful, athletic, fast guy. And that's something you've got to deal with. You do still have to close the distance to get to him. I think that Holland is the kind of guy where if MVP has done the work, I think like Jarzynho, you could maybe open the door for a bit of that. Like you said, and I've said this many times, if there's one thing we've gained from MVP's Bellator career, it's the fact that I don't need to see him grapple. I've seen him get out grappled. Once again, kind of like Edson Barboza, it's just this, he's so amazing on the feet, but he's just got that Achilles heel. I know he's a lot, it's not like the guy has zero grappling. I know he works it, he knows everyone's trying to get him down. It's just about those reps and how they work and being who you are. I think that Kevin is a guy, you think of Kevin, you think of a guy who would oblige a striking battle with MVP. I think though he kind of remembers what happened with Hamzat, and he's like, you know what? I just feel like going out and strangling somebody. And I think that that's really what we're going to get. We're going to get a multifaceted attack from Holland. That being said, you know what? I think that this is going to be that one where we get a little crazy. I'm going to go first round knockout for Michael Venom Page.
Okay, yes. I really want to see that.
I'm
And
feeling
so
it. I am. Now, look, we've talked about it. What is his ceiling in UFC? I mean, I don't know. I mean, when I think about like Kamaru Usman, Colby, even a guy like Shavkat, these really well-rounded guys who could take you down and grapple,
yeah.
I don't know that I see this murderer's row run for Venom Page to a UFC title. That being said, there's a bunch of fun fights I could see for him. So, let's get past Saturday and then we can maybe talk about where do you really see Michael Venom Page fitting in UFC. But for Saturday night, we have a fun showcase and I think that's about as much as you could ask for any given night.
Yeah, I have a feeling it's going to be more like Chandler, right? Here for a good time, not for a long time.
Yeah.
You get to do your thing, your freaking cool ass MVP stuff on the biggest stage, show everybody what you got, and bam, 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 you know, knock out some cool wins, make some money. Maybe you get a title shot, maybe you don't, but you know, it's like about doing your thing on the biggest stage for you know, and the and at the before it's before your career starts to dwindle down. So I think I hope we'll see some cool stuff from him starting Saturday night. I like your prediction. That's what I want to see. So
I mean, hopefully we get it.
come on, Double
Let's
G.
talk about Saturday. Sorry, not Saturday. Let's talk about the co-main event. Dustin Poirier against Benoit Saint Denis. I appreciate, you know what? You know what this could mean for Poirier. He's at home. He's taking on a guy who, let's be real, he wants to have his breakout moment, right? He wants to have his big victory over a veteran that propels him. And Dustin Poirier, he's had his title shots, he's had big fights, he's won big fights, he's lost big fights, and now it's about, well, is there still a little bit more of that left, or is this a changing of the guard type of moment, right? And then for Benoit, I mean, this dude is just, let's just say it, he's just a freaking animal, just explosive, powerful, fast, ruthless. I think about who was his opponent, Matt Frivola. Just absolutely obliterates Matt. Just look like a freaking freight train coming at you for a 55er. That guy is dangerous. Obviously, riding a ton of momentum. You feel like you're getting Dustin maybe in a good moment of his career to catch him. The best Poirier is still one of the best lightweights in the world. I think that now this becomes, how do you stifle a guy like Benoit? Because I feel like the way to beat Benoit for a guy like Poirier, you essentially have to have a very close to a perfect fight. I mean, I think that you have to stick and move. You got to attack the calf. You got to mix it up and maybe try to threaten with some takedowns, make him work. You got to do everything that takes that steam away from the engine that is Saint Denis. I might have just called him Frivola, my bad. But I think that the way to beat a guy like Benoit for a vet is you got to do those things and you got to be very technical. The fact that it's 5 rounds, I think, favors Dustin if he's avoided taking a lot of damage early. The thing with a guy like Benoit, kind of like Ilia and Volk. You don't need to be as perfect, I think, against a guy like Dustin Poirier at this stage. That being said, work the body, work the legs, essentially do everything to make him feel those 5 rounds when you decide to, put the pedal to the metal too and start to raise your output. I think if Benoit does that, he could even get a finish. For Dustin, though, execution of the perfect game plan is the way you're going to get it done. Stifling, pushing. Dustin Poirier beats Benoit. It's not the most exciting fight. I'll say it like that.
Okay. All right.
What about you? How do you see it?
Well, this is interesting. I'm looking at Benoit's record. His UFC debut, he lost. After that, he won every single fight in the UFC. He finished every single fight in his in the UFC by either round one or two. That's pretty impressive. And he's ranked number 12. When's the last time Dustin Poirier fought someone not in the top 10 or even the top 5? That's some trivia for you. Good trivia question for you. So, you know, I respect, and I said this whenever this fight was first made, I respect Poirier for just putting his hands up and saying, I welcome everybody. Let's go. I'm so good, I don't care where you're ranked. I'm just gonna beat you. So it's a gamble, of course, but he wants to fight. He wants to send a message. Don't forget about me. Remember how awesome I am. Coming off that BMF thing, loss, I should say, not a thing, it was a loss, head kick knockout to Gaethje. You know, he said, I just got caught. It was, you know, I was better than him. I was beating him. And that's the truth. He was beating him. And on paper, anyone would agree that Poirier is a slicker, better boxer. And he has grit, but I think if you're doing a toughness grit test, I think Gaethje has more. All that is to say, that loss was shocking, but it's kind of like an outlier. You don't really think about it when you think of Poirier's career. At least I don't. So back to Benoit, who's going to come at him, the young lion wanting to dethrone Poirier's long running, top five, top three position in the UFC lightweight division. He's going to have to be smart, Benoit, if he wants to get this win. And he can be as smart as he can try to be as smart as he wants, but Poirier is just going to be way more, way smarter. He has veteran experience, a high fight IQ, patience, killer instincts. He can see everything. He's so well-rounded, completely well-rounded, and he wants to prove a point. He wants to win in Miami, remind everybody he's on top. So I think Poirier is going to get it done. I think he'll be able to set up Benoit for a fourth round TKO. That's my pick. Why is this five rounds, though? Is this a Poirier
I
choice?
think that was UFC just wanted to make it more epic.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Poirier round four TKO. That's my pick.
Mean, low key, it doesn't need to be a five rounder in my opinion, but
Oh, no,
it's
definitely
already
not.
loaded enough.
Yep.
But I appreciate it. So Poirier,
Yeah.
oh gosh. It's like you don't want to see it happened this way for Dustin, right?
Yeah.
So I want to say Dustin. I'd be lying if I don't know if it's maybe I'm feeling it still a bit from Volkan Ilya, but I just feel like this is another example, fierce young lion against fierce older lion.
Yeah.
Gonna go Benoit Saint-Denis second round TKO.
Oh, shoot. Damn.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's, you know what? Here's the thing. I would love nothing more than to see Dustin represent, and Benoit is gonna have to have his moment another day. But man, this is a tough customer. You know what I mean?
He is.
And Dustin's at home in Miami where he trains. Oh, it'll be what it'll be.
Damn, bro. Ice cold. You're not getting barbecue for Christmas this year.
Oh
Barbecue
my
sauce.
gosh. I love Dustin. He's great.
I know. I'm
They
just
need to
kidding.
get him his special shorts. He wants some floral print shorts, he told me. I hope they give it to him for this
Yeah,
fight.
they should. I was just thinking about that today about the shorts because, look, I actually really like the design that Venom has created for the shorts.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's simple, but it's got some nice lines, and clearly there is some design that effort that went into it, a lot I should say. However, there's so many colors in the rainbow, they should start playing with colors a little bit. You can still have a uniform.
People talked about pink for O'Malley.
That's what I'm saying. They should put his name in pink. Let's see what they do. Like, they can start getting create. I think UFC should give the green light to let Venom be a little more creative with colors. It doesn't have to be flashy. Can be classy, but colorful.
I think certain guys earn it. Like,
Yeah.
okay, if you have, like, let's say gold for a champion, like some metallic gold, I
Yep.
think BMFs like Gaethje should get a silver.
Yeah.
I think that a guy like Derek Lewis, by the way, if you're tied in with a UFC sponsor like the Manscaped and all that,
Yeah.
that has like canvas real estate, getting some Manscaped shorts would be hilarious. And for a guy like Derek Lewis, who's obviously brought so much to the company, why wouldn't you want to designate him as a star to watch? I think guys like Max and Dustin have earned it. Obviously, a guy like Connor. You can make, Valentina, I think, is up there. People like that. There's just options, I feel, that, Sean O'Malley. I think that you can be a little more liberal with awarding fighters, designating them as a star of the company,
Yeah.
And I don't know that it would be like this great effect or it would hurt the bottom line. To kind of have that, and when you talk about these cards, you want to talk about making them feel different. Oh, we have a star. We have one of the few guys who gets different shorts on this card. that makes me pay attention if this is an Apex card, if this is something else, you know what I mean?
Yep.
But that's just me. I digress. Look, the card is so stacked. Before we get into the main event, I want to toss it to you. Look, there's other stuff we could talk about. What is one of the fights that you really like that you wanted to maybe sink your teeth into a bit?
Let's see. Piotr Jan, man, like I said last week, I'm excited to see what he's looking like these days because, again, he was to me in his, I wouldn't say brief, but his 2 year span as a champion. I don't remember how long it went. He was scary, man, a scary dude. And I never thought anyone could beat him in moments like during the fights. I'm like, dude, he just, I always say Terminator, right? Ice. It's just like a glacier, a fast, angry glacier coming at you and punching you. And then we saw him be fallible and lose, time and time again. Like, what's his record now? Let me look up on the old Tapology here.
Lost about four or five in a row
Yeah, man,
to
that's
Aljo, Sean,
shocking
Peter,
to me.
Marab.
Because of how I viewed him. And look, everyone has their slumps and we've seen it. And yeah, man. Tuda Aljo, O'Malley, Merab. So, okay, no walks in the park by any means. But when you get truly tested, that's when you find out, right? So, who did he beat for his championship during his championship run? Let's see. Uriah Faber, was that one of them? No, was that before he got the belt?
That was before the belt.
Jose Aldo?
Aldo,
Corey Sanhagen? No, that was after the belt loss. So,
yeah.
why am I feeling like he was champion for a long time?
I
Jimmy
think it was
Rivera?
the
The
whole
whole
the
good
nature
name.
of the loss to Aljo, and then the fact that he got the interim back against Corey next fight.
That's right, that's right, that's right. Thank you. In any case, I'm very curious to see how this, because Song Yadong is no joke. He's tough, he's hungry, he's fast, he's coming out of Alpha Male, and Uriah's probably like, let's not pretend he's looking for revenge any way he can get it. In any case, I'm excited about that fight, mostly to see how Piotr Jan looks. What about you? What do you have your eye on in this well-stacked card?
To be honest, Curtis Blaydes and Jelton was the
Yeah.
one that I kind of highlighted. I think that look at the run that Jelton is on. I thought that he could have, you could have seen him against Aspinall at 300, straight up. I mean, I think it's this three-headed monster potentially coming up with Aspinall, Cyril, and Jelton if he wins. I think that this is a great time in the heavyweight division. I think it's an exciting time in the heavyweight division. I think he's so stylistically different from those other guys that it makes it very interesting and very fun to have that parity. So I'm really looking at that. Obviously, for Curtis, I mean, this is one of those fights. If you're going to have that moment and fight for the title, you need to turn back a guy like Jelton. He's obviously had that tough luck with the Pavloviches and the Francis Ngannous of the world, but he's still a tough top level guy, and I think that stylistically poses a lot of problems for a guy like Jelton, physicality, wrestling, most obviously. So I think that all those things together makes for a fun fight. Real quick, I mean the women. I mean the way you saw Macy Barber last time against Amanda
Yeah.
Ribas, seeing her back against Caitlin Chookagian, now Caitlin Shimanara, who
Sermonara,
married her husband, obviously.
yeah.
look, Caitlin's a tough veteran too, and she's been one of the most consistent fighters at flyweight for years.
Yeah.
If Macy wins that one, she's right behind Erin and Manon for the title, in my opinion. I mean, right there. Mateusz Gamrot against RDA.
Yeah,
That
that's a
could
good
low
one.
key, they could just freaking throw down for 15 minutes and steal fight of the night,
Yeah.
honestly. So, yeah, it's a great undercard, but the big guys are the ones I have my eye on. I think we're just gonna, honestly, from the Gamrot fight onward, I think it's just gonna be like a roller coaster banger after banger. I was gonna call it MMA Mania. And then it was like, that's too on the nose because there's like so many MMA websites, including one named that.
Called MMA Mania, yeah.
But I was like, all right, so like WWE has WrestleMania and they build it up. This is definitely UFC Mania. UFC 300, it's its own beast and ceremony. The way that this card is matched up though at 299, I was like, this is definitely UFC Mania. I mean,
Yeah,
it's just all the fights have significance. Like, what does this mean for Peter and Song? What does this mean for Gilbert and Jack Della? Obviously, the guys at the top. All these fights, Jelton moving up the ladder, Macy moving up the ladder, Gamrot moving up the ladder. All of these fights are important, you know?
yeah, totally, man. It's
So,
it's not only are they good matchups, but the results will be very significant for the divisions that they're happening in, yeah.
yeah, like these are. You got like three guys who could be fighting for the title in their next fight off the prelims. I mean, that you just don't get that often. So that's why I like it. By the way, guys and girls, to be specific. All of it culminates with the main event. Sean O'Malley taking on Chito Vera for the second time. You've heard me talk about how we got here. I think that Sean was doing some gamesmanship. He picked arguably the best stylistic fight for his first title defense. I know people love Chito. I get why they love Chito. It's easy to love Chito. He has to have quite a good fight to pull this off against Sean O'Malley, in my opinion. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. I love Cheeto so much too. I want to invite him to my house, have a carne asada, drink some Coronas. Like, I really love him as an MMA personality. Just the way he talks, the way he seems to live his life, and he can be a very exciting fighter. He really can be. But then there are times when you're wondering, at least me, why isn't he going in for the kill? Why is he making this choice versus that choice? So a little bit inconsistent with his performances, accessing the fighter IQ, the accessing the game plan, and maybe in his mind, it doesn't always go smoothly versus Sean O'Malley, who has been very, very good. I mean, I don't know what else to say about Sean O'Malley. He's slick, he's intelligent, he's aggressive, he has killer instincts, overly confident. Dangerously overconfident, but does he have to worry much against someone like Cheeto? I don't think so, man. I really don't. Cheeto has power. He has super long legs. He does display a killer instinct at times, but sometimes he seems timid, which is not like him at all. Sometimes he waits too long to get going, and he's not going to have time to do that because Sean O'Malley's pissed. Sean O'Malley wants to get that loss back, so to speak. He wants to be very clear, wants it to be very clear to the world that he is better than Marlon Chito Vera. He's not going to want to give Marlon any chance to get an advantage on Sean O'Malley in that fight. I think O'Malley's going to come out with ice in his veins, looking to knock him out as soon as possible. That's what I think. And I don't want to see Cheeto get, I wouldn't want to see him lose to Sean O'Malley, but I just don't see how he could win. Do you know, because, after Ruka closed, obviously Mackenzie Dern has not gotten back with Perillo. Do you know if Cheeto's with Perillo still or what's going on there coaching wise?
Yes, I think there's a. So Perillo did get a new facility. Mackenzie did say that she's kind of doing. She's not separated from Perillo. There is still working together. Just didn't come together for this last fight. But yeah, Perillo's getting things back and rolling. And even after Ruka closed, you would see videos of Chito kind of getting some one-on-one sessions with Perillo, like at the
Yes.
house.
Yeah. So they've been he's been his main training partner this whole time, or training his coach at this whole training
I
camp.
believe so, yeah.
Okay. That's great news. Because Perillo's also a killer too. So all that is to say, I have not seen in the past that Cheeto has enough to beat the Sean O'Malley that is champion right now. I hope they have a good game plan. I hope they are smart and aggressive. I don't really want to see patience. I want to see intelligence and aggression from Chito Vera moving forward, trying to make Sean O'Malley uncomfortable. And on the flip side, I think Sean O'Malley's just going to do what he does, be elusive, use his heavy hands, his footwork, his head movement, wait for that opportunity where he can land those punches that hurt Marlon and then get the finish. I really want to see Chito Vera win. That's my heart pick. I just don't see it going down. And I think Sean O'Malley can get the job done. TKO round two. That's my pick.
TKO round two for Chito?
No, no. Sean O'Malley.
Yeah, you know what? Look, this is kind of his thing. Chito Vera, similar to a Nate Diaz. It's more about excitement than maybe the most technical beatdown of a guy. Sometimes can let himself lose a lot of rounds, lose a lot of time, but he just, you know, he goes for that kill shot and he makes things happen. And we saw that against Rob Font. We've seen that in other fights. That being said, you know, talk about those fights with the Jose Aldo, Corey Sanhagen. It's not like he hasn't ever run into trouble. With a guy like Sean O'Malley, I think the issue with that is that Sean's physical gifts make it a lot harder to actually implement two game plans. One is you're trying to wait for him to come to you and do heavy damage. Sean is tall, he's got great reach, he's very fast. He could really kind of do his thing on the outside and avoid you very effectively. That makes it hard to like, all right, you know, he's going to come to me, we're going to bang. That's difficult. Secondly, because he's a lot bigger, he's a lot faster. I mean, this isn't a Peter Yan or one of these short, stocky bantamweights coming at you. You have a guy who's very fast, who's, you know, very big, very powerful. You know, you don't want to get into a firefight coming in with Sean O'Malley because he can light you up on the, you know, like he did to Aljamain Sterling. So that's the big mountain going in for Chito Vera. There's things you could do. Working the legs again is probably going to be a huge part of it. Going to the body is a huge part of it. You have to really a very multifaceted attack. Go for takedowns, you know, make him wrestle, make him feel like he can't just bounce and move and do what Sean O'Malley does. And if you could execute that effectively, you put yourself in a good position to really slow him down and maybe start getting in that damage that you are known for that could change the fight. For a guy like Sean O'Malley, I mean, the thing about him is that I almost need to see... I would have told you Peter Yan's the perfect guy for Sean O'Malley. And to his credit, Sean did to Peter what he needed to. Someone who could really attack the legs, attack the body, very durable. Obviously, we're going to talk about Merab if Sean wins. We'll talk about Merab either way. But you need someone like that because if you don't have those certain characteristics... You have to be very perfect to get past a guy who's got so many of these dynamic moves in O'Malley. And I think that's what makes him fun to watch. He's got that attitude. He's got that swagger. Best walkout of 2023. He's in a big moment to just deliver in Miami at the top of this mega card. I'm just favoring Sean O'Malley too many ways stylistically in this one. I'm going to roll with you second round TKO Sean O'Malley.
Oh, wow. Okay, we are in agreement.
Yes.
Hello.
I mean, it's going to be a huge card. It's going to be a huge night. I think that it's just going to be big. You know what I mean?
I do, man. Are you going to be, you know, sometimes we can't sit down in front of the TV from the beginning. But is this one of those where you said Gamrot, RDA, that's when it starts to... That's when the action starts for you. Is that about when you'll sit down, or are you going to try to get down, start watching even earlier?
Depends when I work. Depends what I got going on. Things like that. But typically, yeah, I try to like... For me, it's not necessarily when I sit. I mean, the second we have a lull, I'll walk around my house. I'm not very big fan of, unless I have to, sitting there waiting for fights. So like,
okay.
For example, if prelims get done early, that's a great time for my laundry, things like that. So
yeah.
If I'm at the house by myself, if you're I'm with people, man. It's not like, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, let's go, you know. Freaking fire up the PlayStation, UFC 5 in between fights. No, but No, so that's usually my strategy.
I like it.
Anyway, look, we're gonna have a ton to break down next week. Then obviously the UFC keeps rolling. UFC Vegas 88, Tai Tuivasa taking on Marcin Tybura. Ironically, I was so excited I forgot Tai already has a fight. So he can't take on Jairzinho just yet, but maybe the winners fight each other. Who knows? So
Yeah.
we'll see where we go from there. Till then, guys, thank you for listening. Remember, like, comment, subscribe. We'll be back next week.